We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Donald Trump giving his inauguration speech today. We want to hear from you, your reaction to that speech, your thoughts on what the next 4 years will bring. Give us a call at 1-877-600-5279. Our producers are standing by to take your calls. First, though, we're going to hear from some experts about how California will adapt to new policies on, let's say, immigration, healthcare, the environment, etc. And first, I want to bring in Jim Brulte, chairman of the California Republican Party. Welcome to the program.
Oh, good to see you, Madeline.
Well, good to have you. I know your time is brief with us, so I want to begin with you. Just give me your general reaction to the inauguration.
Well, first of all, any inauguration is a great, spectacular event. This is my fifth, and, I was honored to be a part of history. I was proud to see two Democrat presidents, former presidents, the current president, Democratic president, and one of the Republican presidents there. And the crowd was absolutely unbelievable. It was just a wonderful event.
Okay, so there's been a lot said about how California's leaders are going to resist Donald Trump on many areas, as I mentioned, in immigration and healthcare and the environment. Those are some of the top issues of concern. What do you think about that?
Well, I think the Democrats in Sacramento have figured out what the Republicans in Texas did relative to President Obama. The Republicans in Texas figured out it was good politics to oppose his policies. In fact, they sued the Obama administration multiple times, most of which they lost, by the way. Mm-hmm. But you can make a case that the governor of Texas today is governor because of his opposition to President Obama. And I think the Democrats are kind of racing each other to the front to be the loudest critic of Donald Trump. Probably good politics on their part. But
are you saying it's just politics and not substance? I mean, we're talking about ideas to possibly deport many immigrants, to roll back California.
Let's start with the economy. First of all, the California budget has a deficit. Donald Trump didn't create that deficit. It's created by the Democrats who have controlled Sacramento. Donald Trump wants to bring back the trillions of dollars that are overseas. He wants to reduce the corporate tax rate and have that money repatriated back to this country. If he does and just gets a third or half of it, hundreds of billions of dollars come to California-based companies. That helps the California budget. It helps the California economy. So just start with that. Second of all, if Donald Trump does what he says, and he wants to deport people who are here illegally, who have committed crimes in this country, that will help us reduce the crime rate in California. And that's important because the crime rate in California has been going up over the last couple of years.
Are there two policies
that will be very, very beneficial to the people of California.
Are there any areas where you disagree with him?
You know, I'm not here to talk about who I disagree with on the Republican side. My job is to point out where the Democrats are wrong. Let me just say, though, from the time I began voting in 1974 until this last election, I've only found one candidate that I agreed with 100% of the time, and that candidate was me.
Okay. What about issues when it comes to climate? And there has been talk about getting rid of California's waiver when it comes to carbon emissions from cars and automobiles. It's a big deal in terms of reducing greenhouse gases in the state. At least the state has placed a lot of importance on that. Where are you on that? And where's the California Republican Party on that?
Well, the Republican Party has a platform. It's very clear. You can see it. Look, California has been the leader in fighting climate change, but it's global warming, not California warming. And a lot of the policies that we've enacted in California have simply shifted dirty vehicles out of the state. They haven't hurt the big corporations who have, like, big trucking companies that have trucks inside California and outside California. All they did was hurt California trucking companies. So, you know, I believe that climate change is real. I believe that man plays a part in that. And we should be sensitive to the environment, but there's also an economic component to it as well.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Jim Brulte, chairman of the California Republican Party. And I want to go to the phones now. We're getting lots of calls in. Again, the number, if you want to weigh in on anything about the Trump presidency and where California is headed in the next 4 years, give us a call at 877-600-5279. Lance from Venice, you're on KCRW.
Oh, hi, Madeline. Thank you for taking my call. I'm hoping that the direction we'll move in with the new administration is looking toward individual accountability and us looking at ourselves as citizens and doing what we can do to contribute to the better as a whole. And I think that's a message we can extract from the Trump's team and the message he's put out. So hopefully that'll resonate with all of us, and we look to be more responsible as individuals and participate in governance in a positive way, as JFK often spoke of.
So you're optimistic. You're holding out hope that the country will become unified.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call. I want to bring in Sherry Bebich-Jeffy now. She's a USC public policy professor. Welcome, Sherry.
Hi, Madeline. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. And I assume you watched the inauguration.
Yep.
What has been happening in Washington, D.C.? And there's been a split screen there. There's support, of course, for the president. And there's also a lot of dissent and some violence happening in Washington. What do you make of this? Is this a peaceful procession of power, changeover of power, and yet there is a lot of dissent, a lot of angry people out there?
There are a lot of angry people on both sides. There was a coalition of angry people that helped elect Donald Trump, and he sent that message out to them today. You are now going to be front and center. We are taking power away from Washington and giving it back to the people. And there were a lot of angry people who are still angry and concerned and anxious over the message that they perceive a certain group of Americans will get the benefit of Donald Trump and other Americans will not. I don't see much of a kumbaya coming in the foreseeable future, quite frankly.
All right. Let me play a clip of tape of Donald Trump at his inauguration speech today. This is a soundbite that's gotten a fair amount of attention for its stark portrayal of how he sees America.
Mothers and children trapped in poverty in our inner cities, rusted out factories scattered like tombstones across the landscape of our nation. An education system flush with cash, but which leaves our young and beautiful students deprived of all knowledge. And the crime, and the gangs, and the drugs that have stolen too many lives and robbed our country of so much unrealized potential. This American carnage stops right here and stops right now.
And Sherry, what do you make of that? That's a pretty grim assessment of what's happening in America's cities. And is that something that is you don't hear very often in these inauguration addresses?
Without question, Madeline. This was not so much an inaugural address, I think, as it was a campaign speech. And even more than that, it was somewhat dissing the four former presidents who stood behind Donald Trump, as well as America, to be quite frank. It is as stark a speech, more stark a speech, more militant a speech, more pessimistic a speech than any of the inaugural addresses that I have viewed, and my first one, which of course I viewed from my cradle, was John F. Kennedy. The inaugural address, theoretically, should be a look to the future, a positive, optimistic, but realistic assessment of where the country is. I didn't feel that way with this speech.
All right, let's go to Sean in Hermosa Beach.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the lack of depth that Donald Trump uses in his rhetoric, similar to who you just had on, saying the pessimistic, he's very fear-based. It's as if he's taking a page out of Edward Bernays' handbook, The Father of Propaganda, controlling people with fear, continuing to say the same thing over and over again. I believe Trump bought the trademark to make America great again, actually a couple of years ago when he started laying the groundwork to run for presidency, even though he mentioned that he had didn't want to run at the time, but he was laying the groundwork. And when you continually beat people with fear and propaganda and saying the same thing over and over again, there is a sense of mind manipulation that takes place. And I think the country will be more divided than it's ever been in its history. I followed politics and geopolitics for a number of years now, and this is perhaps one of the scariest times in our country when you divide us against China, bringing in Russia, and having that whole backstory, no tax returns being shown to the people. There's a very big veil of secrecy here.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Sean. And I want to bring in Mike Madrid. He's a Republican political consultant. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Well, I want you to react to what Sean just said, that he's saying that Trump is sowing fear, dividing the country, especially when it comes to China and Russia, and just creating what he feels is going to be a pretty despotic next 4 years.
Let me first start by saying that I think that this was a very unique inaugural address. I think it's pretty clear that this really kind of transcends the traditional partisan, rhetoric that we hear. This was a very, very populist message, and it was, I think, I guess it could be characterized as a darker tone. But as Sherry Babbage Jeffy just mentioned, there is an ominous feeling amongst a wide swath of Americans at this point in time. And while we have traditionally looked to our leaders and our presidents to be that more optimistic, hopeful leader, it's also undeniable that this happened for a reason. This didn't just happen out of coincidence. And, Trump is speaking to that. And I think you could characterize this as the forgotten man speech. He's trying to speak to an America that legitimately, for very good reasons, feels that they are losing not only their economic place, their health, their very identity, and regardless of who the leader is, that has to be spoken to. I'm not suggesting that this is necessarily the best way to do it, but to ignore it, which I think is what we've been dealing with for the past few years, has gotten us to this situation.
All right, I want to give out the number again for you to call, 877-600-5279, 877-600-KCRW, to call in and tell us what you think about what's happening right now about the inauguration of our 45th president, Donald Trump, and where you want California to go from here. And I will pose that question to you, Mike Madrid. Where does California position itself? Obviously, its leaders are all Democratic, and they have taken out a position of opposition to Donald Trump on a variety of issues. And what do you think of that?
Well, look, I think California finds itself in a very precarious position for a number of reasons. And I think the word choices that we use, or rather our political leadership chooses, are very important. I think our governor, Jerry Brown, has struck precisely the right tone that he should, a voice of reasoned opposition. I'm less optimistic and hopeful about the tone struck by our legislative leaders, which I would characterize as more resistance. I don't think that that's productive. I think it's very harmful. And to think that California, while we are a large economy, while we are a diverse state and a largely populated state, to think that somehow we can take on the federal government in this antagonistic tone, I think, is very dangerous, and it's certainly not productive. So I think, look, California has its place in the American psyche. It always has. The West always has, and California has always embodied that. And I think we need to stay true to those ideals. Although I disagree with a lot of the elected officials and politicians in Sacramento, I am proud of the fact that there are certain policy positions that we will be standing for and fighting for. But it cannot. It's very important that it does not devolve into this rhetoric of resistance that we have begun to see from politicians in Sacramento that are playing to their base. Now is the time, I think, for that those reasoned cooler heads like Governor Brown to prevail, for good people to come together and say we may have disagreements. You cannot fight petulance with petulance, and you cannot fight chaos with chaos. That never ends well, and I'm concerned about the leadership in California, at least a lot of it, and the strident, resistant, angry tone I'm starting to hear.
I want to bring in Andy Kroll now. He's a contributing writer at the California Sunday Magazine, and he is writing a series for the magazine called The Great Exception, California versus Trump, where he has outlined the Democratic leadership in Sacramento and their plans to resist and oppose Donald Trump. Andy Kroll, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us exactly what Mike Madrid is talking about when it comes to some of the leaders in Sacramento. What tone are they striking and what plans are they making?
From the very moment that Donald Trump was announced as the presidential winner on election night, the legislative leaders in California, democratically dominated legislature with supermajorities in both chambers, they set out to strike a very decisive tone, a very clear tone that California would not affected or would fight back as much as possible against the Trump administration. There was this joint statement that the Assembly Speaker, Anthony Rendon, the Senate President pro tempore, Kevin DeLeon, put out the morning after the election. And it is, one of the more striking pieces of political rhetoric we've seen this year, apart from the man we've just elected president, been sworn in as president. You know, that statement starts, "Today we woke up feeling like strangers in a foreign land," which is about as strong of language as you could find for that moment. And so in the legislature, you have these Democratic leaders and you have their caucuses really coming out of the gate as strongly as possible, finding legislative avenues for blocking what might be coming from the Trump administration, hiring Eric Holder, the former Attorney General of the United States, as their outside legal muscle, if you will, and really looking for every way possible to shore up California from policies from the federal government that might be hostile to what California is trying to do.
Okay, so we'll get into some of those details in a few minutes. But first, I want to go back to the phones and bring in Alex from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Madeline. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, fabulous to be in the show. Thank you so much. You know, as a 25-year-old, I am just baffled at how much my parents, who are baby boomers, and our country in general is reacting on both sides. I think it's incredibly foolish to be ployed by all of these tactics of Trump to get flustered and angry. We are where we are today because of faults on both sides of the parties. And Democrats, myself included, have a much holier-than-thou idea of how we got here. We have all faulted on environmental regulations. We have all faulted on, again, as Lance said earlier from Venice, really being productive members of our own democratic system. And I just think it's absolutely saddening to see how easily people are becoming riled out of seemingly nothing.
Well, seemingly nothing, or
sure,
they are reading too much into what the president has said on the campaign trail?
Great question, Madeline. Precisely as you said, you know, I think there are real issues to be discussed and dissected, but in the end, the rhetoric I was speaking about is the hate speech, the fear-mongering, everything that Trump purports on a daily basis that, you know, in the end is just completely childlike behavior. you know, and you've had so many fantastic guests just today on the show who have been level-headed, who have been, you know, as the chair of the Republican Party was in particular, just amicable individuals who have a level head, and that's what we need, and that's what I just want to get out our listeners today, that, you know, please don't get flustered and lose hope, because being a mature adult is what we all need right now.
All right. Mm-hmm. Alex from San Francisco, thank you for your thoughts. I really appreciate it. Also appreciate your listening from San Francisco to KCRW here in Santa Monica. We're going to take a break now. You're listening to California the Next 4 Years on KCRW. Coming up, we'll talk about more about what our lawmakers are planning to do to oppose Donald Trump. We're also going to hear about the protests and what you plan to do to protest today, this weekend. Give us a call at 877-600-5279, and we'll be back in a moment on Press Play. You're listening to California, the Next 4 Years on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand, and we're taking your calls today on what's next for California in this new era. Give us a call at 1-877-600-5279, 877-600-KCRW. Here is Donald Trump today at his inaugural address.
Every decision on trade, on taxes, on immigration, on foreign affairs will be made to benefit American workers and American families. We must protect our borders from the ravages of other countries making our products, stealing our companies, and destroying our jobs.
All right, Donald Trump at his inaugural address earlier today. I want to talk about what he's talking about there in terms of protecting borders from the ravages of other countries. Andy Kroll, back to you. California has some ideas to fight that, to fight building a border wall, and I believe a bill was introduced. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and this was obviously one of Donald Trump's very first talking points, or sort of vaguely defined pledges, was addressing this supposed border problem, even at the same time when, you know, illegal border crossings have dropped dramatically. But California, after his election, has responded. Legislators have responded immediately. You've seen a package of bills introduced. One would require a sort of a public referendum for any kind of border wall, new border wall construction in California. There's another bill that would try to create so-called safe zones at public schools, at hospitals, at courthouses, and that would sort of shield state and local officials from carrying out deportation orders. Donald Trump has talked about potentially mass deportations of undocumented residents, and this bill would look to be a counter to that as well. And so you're seeing a number of legislative ideas being tossed around in Sacramento as to how can California put itself in between a Trump administration and those immigration policies that the now president has outlined.
And Sherry Bebich Jeffy, a public policy professor, you've been watching Sacramento for a long time, in particular Governor Jerry Brown. Have you ever seen anything like this?
Like what? The drawing of red lines?
Yeah.
The drawing of lines in the sand?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is really going to date me, but I'd say that the Democrats have done it before. Republicans have done it before. The party out of power has a history of drawing lines in the sand. This was particularly true, I think, when Ronald Reagan took office as governor of the state of California. What is different this time, I think, Madeline, is leadership on both sides of the aisle have learned from history. Leadership on both sides of the aisle is responding to the polarization that we see nationally. In California, we have a state that is now deep, deep blue, very, very Democratic. There is not the risk there might have been earlier in Democratic legislative leaders and a Democratic governor, although Governor Brown certainly has been measured in his response. But there's not that great a risk in opposing Donald Trump. And it's particularly true because on many of the issues, California as a state, including Republicans and Democrats and no party preference voters, are very much on the opposite side from the new administration. It doesn't surprise me that this is happening. I think if you want to look at the bald politics of the situation, it was a smart political move for the Democratic legislative leadership to hire someone like Eric Holder to protect their interests in Washington. And by the way, just today, the Assembly Democratic Caucus sent out a hashtag Dear Californians letter and video promising to protect everything that Mr. Crowell outlined in terms of the legislation that is being introduced. There's a reason for that. It's politically positive, and even ideologically, California is more in support of that perspective than Californians are of the president.
All right. Thank you. We're going to hear now from Lindsay in Pasadena. Welcome to Press Play.
Hi, I guess I wanted to say, when I hear the frustration on the left and sort of the cries that, does anything matter anymore? You know, we have all these financial conflicts of interest that have emerged and issues with undisclosed assets for the Secretary of Treasury nominee and things like that. You know, I think it really echoes the cries that we heard in the 90s from the Republicans. You know, you had a president lying under oath, Clinton. And the Republicans sort of felt at that time, does anything matter anymore? You know, the left wanted to portray it as sort of a reactionary anti-sexual promiscuity stance rather than it maybe being as much an issue of lying under oath. I think the cries that we hear today are not so different than those cries from the 90s.
Well, what do you envision, though, in the next 4 years? And how do you position yourself in terms of your political activism or how you view the country in California?
I guess I had never thought of myself as being particularly politically motivated, but I think it's interesting to see. My mom is a baby boomer, and it's interesting to see she and her friends are joining the Women's March. It's interesting to see her. I've never seen her pick up a political cause, and so her doing that has sort of made me think about, you know, maybe I do need to do more myself, and maybe I had thought, you know, being a woman was not so much of a, I don't know, it didn't seem like much of a political cause, but now it seems like maybe I could back political causes on the basis of gender.
Okay, Lindsay, thank you so much for your call. Great to hear from you. And let's go to another caller, Maureen in Echo Park. You're on Press Play.
Hi, Madeline.
Hi.
I'm planning on going to the march in Los Angeles downtown tomorrow with my kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little worried about signage. I just panicked because I realized I might have to explain the word pussy to my 8 and 10-year-olds.
Oh, well, okay.
And I really, really am asking you, actually, or maybe somebody, a caller could call in, but I really don't know what I'm going to say because I think that probably will be on plenty of signage.
Well, I guess you could explain it. Well, you can just, I don't have an answer for you. You could be honest and explain that that is now part of the vernacular. Why are you bringing your kids to this?
I thought it was going to be, from what I've heard from the organizers, it's not a protest. It's going to be a kind of a, you know, an active way you can show your support for human rights. And I thought it would be, I know a lot of my friends are bringing their kids. So I thought it would be okay. And I thought it would be also historical.
Right, right. And so what is it that you want your kids to learn coming out of this?
Well, I want them, they've already made signs, and they're very aware of the election and how disappointed we all were. But I think we want to support the things that we support, like the education in Los Angeles and human rights and women. And my daughter, who's only 8, is very interested in representing the girls of California and I guess of the future. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I just feel like it's important and they're excited to go. They're happy. They're optimistic.
So you're seeing it as a positive thing, not a negative thing.
Yeah, I do. In fact, we talked about how our signs had to reflect positive, sentiments and not, we didn't want to use his name and we wanted to stay positive. So it'll be like, stay strong, be active, be brave. I think my daughter's is Girls Unite, Let's Fight, and things like that. So I think it'll be a positive, historical, I think they're going to see L.A. in a new way because it's going to be politically charged and politically active. And I think that can be exciting. I mean, I'm deadly gloomy and really sad.
All right, Maureen, thank you so much for your call. And of course, the protests aren't just happening here in Los Angeles today. There were a variety of them in Washington. And here's an audio sampling.
Down with Trump! Down with Trump! Down with Trump!
My body, my choice!
Her body, her choice!
My body, my choice!
No one says police! No one says police! No one says police! Black lives matter! Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
Okay, a variety of protests going on in Washington, D.C. Some of them got violent and windows were smashed in stores and there were police and I believe there was some tear gas fired. I want to bring in Gonzalo Martinez de Veda. He is a contributor to a guide. It's called Indivisible, a practical guide for resisting the Trump agenda. He's in Washington. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what do you make of these protests? Is this an effective way of registering dissent?
I think it's an understandable reaction. It's a time of deep uncertainty for immigrants, for people that were not part of this vision that we heard about during the swearing-in today, for folks of different communities that have actually been excluded in this campaign. But we at the Indivisible Guide have put forward other tools that we believe will be effective in the long run that don't necessarily have to involve descending on Washington or some of the other tactics that we're seeing here today. And they actually involve working locally in everyone's home district through their members of Congress.
So what is your tip in that regard? Is it about calling up your member of Congress? Is it about doing an email campaign? Is it about going to live events? What?
It's all of the above. We have to remember, even as we prepare for this new administration to enter the White House, that 8 years ago, Obama had taken office with much higher favorability ratings with a supermajority in Congress. And even so, a small vocal minority that called themselves the Tea Party was able to really hijack the national conversation and block a lot of his policy. So the main message that we would want to send out of the guide today is that none of Trump's policies have been implemented or passed through Congress yet. And as important as it is, and as happy as I am to hear about all the state-level advocacy, I hope for the sake of the rest of the country that places, even blue districts in California, don't forget that they still hold a lot of power through their 2 senators and their 1 congressperson in the House.
Well, I have heard from people who say, well, look, my congressman is a Democrat, and I'm a Democrat, so what could I do? My representative is already voting against or planning to vote against Trump's policies.
Well, one lesson that we can learn from the Tea Party, if we recall, is that they actually focused on Republican members of Congress a lot of the time. And what they did was they shut down any avenue for compromise. So they were present at every town hall. They were calling every phone line at every district office, reminding Republicans that they were there to represent their own individual districts and not a higher party agenda. And that's exactly what blue district voters can do with their members right now. You know, I'll speak as a former New Yorker from a relatively blue part of the country as well, that I used to sort of rest on the laurels of knowing that I had sent and the voters in my district had sent Democrats to Congress. But there is a wide range of ways that Democrats are going to interact with this administration. And one of the messages that we can all together send is that bipartisanship with misogynist, xenophobic, racist administration is not politics as usual. It might be unacceptable in many cases. And
but
we have to support Democrats
who
say that.
What the Tea Party was criticized for by Democrats for being obstructionist and basically creating gridlock in Washington so that President Obama couldn't get anything done. I mean, the other side was roundly criticized for those tactics.
Well, we have to be clear that a couple of things are different here. You know, we're not talking about obstructionism for the sake of obstructing. In this case, we're not a vocal minority. There are more people who voted to have a Democrat in the White House than the other way around. We are the majority. We don't need to use the tactics that they used in terms of using violence and racial epithets and things like that. But we can stand firm in the message that Congress still has to represent each individual district. And if that means not working with Trump's agenda for 2 years until we can take back the two chambers of Congress, then so be it.
All right. I want to go back to the phones right now and remind you that the phone number is 877-600-5279, 877-600-KCRW. Vanessa from South L.A., you're on KCRW. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you.
So, listening to some of your guests and this idea that we should somehow unite for the sake of the country, as your earlier guest said, this is not a moment for kumbaya. That, you know, we passed that. This is not a conservative winning this election. That's not what this is about. This is a man who is not empowering conservatives. He's empowering white supremacists and this alt-right movement that if you go on Twitter and you are to read some of their posts, I mean, it will shake you to your core. This is not a time for Democrats to give in and to, you know, do what's best for the country, or we do what's best for the country by resisting this movement. This is a movement. It's not just about Donald Trump. It's about his supporters. And we need to look at voter suppression. That we need to attack that. We need to attack gerrymandering. And we need to start talking about how we can divest as Californians from the federal government, in a sense that we are paying for a lot of these states that have these draconian laws against everyone who's a minority. And we need to organize in that way and to get serious about unifying on our side and resisting this movement.
And how do you plan to do that?
Well, I protest, I write blogs, and I try to organize people.
And do you see this as a moment, an unprecedented moment in your life in terms of your political activism and where you see the country going and your place in it?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think I've ever had to participate in politics as an adult. I don't think the situation has ever been this desperate. And I don't, you know, people, you know, making it out to be, well, it's just a opposition political view. It's not. You know, there's a reason why, you know, these white supremacist groups are holding rallies. And, you know, now we're into denial that, you know, the BLM movement is now an anti-cop movement. And, you know, our progress is they're trying to turn back our progress. And they're going to try to do to Barack Obama what they did to Jimmy Carter. And, no, I have never had to do this before because our country has not been the rancor that is in our political discourse right now is unprecedented, I believe.
All right, Vanessa, thank you for your call. We're going to take a short break right now. We have to go to break, but we will come back. You're listening to California the Next 4 Years on KCRW. More on what you want and what you plan to do. We want you to call 877-600-5279, and we'll come back to you in just a moment on Press Play. You're listening to California the Next 4 Years on KCRW. We're taking your calls today on what's next for the state in this new era. You can give us a call at 877-600-5279. Of course, lots of protests going on right now and planned throughout the weekend. Here is Myra Todd. She's a protester in downtown Los Angeles today.
He won the elections, but for his whole elections, he's been terrorizing people, you know, scaring people that he's going to deport us. It's going to be hard for him to deport us because we are 11 million undocumented people, people who work, people who pay taxes.
All right, I want to bring back in Gonzalo Martinez de Vedia, and you are putting out a guide on resisting the Trump agenda. That's in the title, and you're also an immigrant rights advocate and activist. And I want you to just address her concerns and lots of concerns from immigrants, be they undocumented or not, about what's going to happen here in California and, in fact, throughout the United States under a Donald Trump presidency, and what you'd recommend in terms of preparing.
Yeah, we are entering the unknown in terms of immigration policy. And I think that the protester you had just on, you know, echoes the sentiments of the 11 million folks that are not documented in the U.S., but also the broader immigrant community of all types of immigration status, that we are headed into an administration that largely ran on scapegoating immigrants and folks of different communities in this country. But they are really just one group of many that are under assault in this new agenda and through the cabinet picks that we're seeing around Donald Trump. So I'll, you know, go back to the guide and the techniques that we've put out there to hopefully resist some of these proposals, and say that immigrants and citizens and residents altogether can come to their individual district offices and tell Congress about these concerns, so that they can then translate that into real power to oppose some of the worst that we expect to see over the next 2 years.
And Andy Kroll, a writer at California Sunday Magazine, in your research for your pieces, your in-depth stories on California and what it plans to do, you say that lawmakers are trying to take a page from Texas. And we mentioned that a little bit earlier in the show. I was wondering if you could flesh that out. Texas has been an active litigator, shall we say, against the Obama presidency. What is California planning to do similarly to Texas?
Right. The now governor of Texas, but the attorney general for the bulk of the Obama administration, was a gentleman named Greg Abbott. His line was, quote, "I go into the office, I sue the federal government, and then I go home," end quote. I don't think you're going to see the attorney general taking office now in California, Javier Becerra, experienced congressman from Los Angeles, give out a quote quite like that. But I think what you will see, similar to Texas, is California using every legal tool at its disposal to push back against whether it is the federal government, the EPA, not regulating greenhouse gases as it should, denying waivers to California to go above and beyond emission limits, to protect different citizens, different segments of citizens in California. We did see a little bit of this under the last Republican president, George W. Bush. And you had Bill Lockyer, who was a California attorney general, and then future Governor Jerry Brown for several years as an attorney general. And California was very active in the courts on all manner of issues, the environment, consumer protection, workplace safety, you name it. California was in the courts and joining other states around the country, fighting back against harmful policies from the federal government.
And Mike Madrid, Republican political consultant, what do you make of that strategy?
Well, I think it's an apt analogy. And just like Texas, they will lose 90% of the lawsuits. And that's the unfortunate part of the political leadership here in California, is rather than seeking a solution to these very real problems, the idea is to, you know, like a lot of folks calling in and some of the guests on your show is saying, let's hunker down, let's get into the trenches, and let's fight. And look, on some issues, that's absolutely the right tack to take, but not on every tack. Mm-hmm. And that's I think we need to learn from Texas to show, you know, again, obstinance and petulance is not a solution, and it does not help your state, and it's not going to help California. Every one of the bills that was mentioned earlier are on very, very questionable legal grounds and would probably not see the light of day. There's very little that California can do to stop a number of these changes. And while in some instances we as a state should absolutely fight, the better course of action politically and policy and frankly to protect our citizens is to try to work with the administration. Because in a straight-up fight, which our politicians are trying to dig in and prepare for, learn from Texas. You're going to lose 90% of the time and you get nothing. And that I think is the lesson of this election, is if you think being loud and resisting and being antagonistic is going to get you something, the likelihood is that you may end up with absolutely nothing, which is where California kind of finds itself today.
Well,
that's something we need to learn from.
Yeah. Where do you see as areas where there could be some workable compromise?
Well, look, California has the largest number of undocumented residents here. And I've worked across the aisle with Democrats to try to work to remedy that, to push the federal government while Obama was the president to force his hand. Let's remember, Barack Obama deported far more undocumented residents than, you know, all the other presidents combined. The political will has changed now, and it, because of partisan reasons, we conveniently forget that. But the solution is very real. I'm sorry, the problem is very real, and the solutions, while complicated, should have us sitting at the table saying, this is what we can offer as a solution to make this work. Rather, what California has done is they've been obstinate, sat down and said, we're going to do what we want to do, regardless of federal laws, or we're going to skirt federal laws. And what Trump is saying, regardless of how you feel about it, he's saying, no, we're going to force the federal laws that we have. And that's a zero sum type of politics from both sides. That the people that get hurt are the immigrants in the middle.
Mm.
And so while I respect those, and the fear out there is very, very real and very well justified, it is a failure, as the caller Alex said earlier, there's a failure of both sides to try to work out a solution. And this idea that you can retrench and put out guidebooks on the resistance, to think that that is somehow going to be productive towards a solution is ludicrous, and it's unfortunate, and a lot of people are going to get harmed in the process.
All right, let's bring in Helene from Marina Del Rey. Welcome to KCRW.
Hi, Madeline.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask your speaker earlier, who says that the Democrats are going to take back the House and the Senate in 2018, you know, what the plan is to welcome the progressive arm into the party. And to organize properly, to get rid of corporate funding, and to also win local and state elections, too, because the Democrats are losing across the board, not just at the Congress, the House, and the President. It's all over the country at this point.
Okay, I believe that was Gonzalo Martinez de Vedia. And what do you make of that, of what Helene just said? What is the plan?
Yeah, I mean, and I do want to address what the previous caller said as well about putting forward solutions. You know, the fact of the matter is that for the next 2 years, folks that have worked across progressive policy areas are not going to be able to set the agenda. But what we can do is resist and oppose some of the worst aspects of the Trump agenda. And that's what we put forward in the guide that I think might be more productive than trying to come up with our own vision at a time that we do not have the majority in Congress to really get that through.
But she was wondering, what is the plan to win back Congress in 2 years, if there is one?
I think, again, we can look back at what the Tea Party did for the Republicans back in 2009 by sort of building local grassroots support around new policy objectives. On the Republican side, they laid the groundwork for the conversation that we had 2 years after Obama took office during the midterm elections. And that conversation was on their terms. And in the conversation that they had started in the halls of Congress for 2 years. And that's the groundwork that we can lay now by being present within the most bread and butter way of engaging our political system, which is through our senators and members of the House of Representatives.
Okay, I want to go back to the phones. And Mark from Silver Lake, you're on KCRW and Press Play. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to make a quick point about how during this time it's really important to keep telling your individual stories of how potential actions of the Trump administration could affect you. And I wanted to tell a quick one about myself. We're on Obamacare. It's myself, my husband. We have twin 3-year-old boys. And he was just diagnosed with leukemia. He's 40. It came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And we lived in New York before, where when it was just the two of us, we were paying $2,800 a month for health insurance. In California, through the ACA, we're paying $1,400 for the whole family. And because of that, he's being able to be treated at City of Hope,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
we feel like he has a very good chance. And I think we would have been priced out. And I think the ACA is literally saving his life.
So you're really afraid that that is going to be taken away from you.
It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Andy Kroll, what is the plan to try to help people here in California if Obamacare, you know, if there is no more Affordable Care Act and the replacement doesn't go far enough? And I believe that California received some $20 billion in federal money from the Affordable Care Act.
The healthcare question, as it relates to what the Trump administration is going to do and what Congress is going to do with the Affordable Care Act, is huge because, as you said, there is some $20 billion that the state gets for ACA-related programs. And if that money goes away, that is not just a hole in the budget you can easily backfill. I think, in terms of what happens with repeal, that is going to move slower than people are made to often believe because of, you know, how complicated this is. And so I don't think, you know, repeal happening right away, people's health care is going to go vanish overnight. But in California, I think what you're going to see, especially around the 2018 gubernatorial race, is you're going to see candidates talking about things like single payer. You're going to see them talking about ways to design a health care program, maybe not an exact replica of the Affordable Care Act for California, but something like that. Fully recognizing that healthcare is going to be one of the most important issues in California in the next 2 to 4 years, just as the caller pointed out. So think about single payer, think about other kind of healthcare solutions, not unlike the ACA, and you're going to hear a lot about that in the next 2 years.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. I want to thank all of the guests today. Andy Kroll, contributing writer at California Sunday Magazine, Gonzalo Martinez de Vedea. He is the contributor to Indivisible, a practical guide for resisting the Trump agenda. Mike Madrid, Republican political consultant. Jim Brulte, chairman of the California Republican Party. And Sherry Bebich Jeffy, public policy professor at USC. You've been listening to California the Next 4 Years on KCRW. You can keep the conversation going on our Facebook page at KCRW. Press Play. Whatever your plans are this weekend, stay safe. I'm Madeline Brand. I'll see you on Monday.